Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive.
Today we're tackling a really significant work, Harvey Mansfield's interpretation of Alexis de Tocqueville, specifically his reading of Democracy in America.
Right. And this isn't, you know, just some dusty history lesson about a Frenchman traveling around America in the 1830s.
No, not at all. Mansfield makes the case pretty forcefully that Tocqueville gives us the most vital framework for actually understanding modern democracy right now, today.
We're talking about the deep wiring, almost, of how we think and act politically as democratic citizens.
That's it. And the core tension, the big question Mansfield pulls out of Tocqueville is this. Can liberty, can individual greatness, can human excellence actually survive this relentless global march towards equality?
It's a huge question, and we're going to go beyond just the headlines, the day-to-day politics, to look at what Tocqueville warned about most urgently. This threat he called soft despotism.
A chilling term. The idea that we might willingly become, well, docile.
Exactly. We really think you'll walk away from this with a powerful new lens for looking at democratic life right here in the 21st century.
So before we dive into Tocqueville's big ideas through Mansfield's eyes, maybe just a quick word on Mansfield himself, the guide for this journey.
Good idea. Harvey Claflin Mansfield Jr., I mean, his credentials are just incredible. He's been a professor of government at Harvard for, what is it, over six decades?
Yeah, a fixture. And he's not just a historian. He's known as a deep scholar of classical political thought. He's written huge works on Machiavelli, on Aristotle.
So his angle is really political philosophy. He's searching for the enduring truths, the permanent tensions in these texts, not just, you know, cataloging historical facts.
And that's what makes his take on Tocqueville so distinct. His interpretive method is famously meticulous, very subtle. He's trying to uncover the deepest, sometimes maybe even intentionally hidden meanings.
Hidden? How so?
Well, Mansfield suggests Tocqueville sometimes softened his critiques, especially his anxieties about equality, knowing that a modern democratic audience might just reject the harsher truths outright.
Ah, okay. So Mansfield isn't just giving us a summary. He's reading between the lines, looking for those underlying, maybe slightly darker philosophical worries.
Precisely. And his own, let's say, conservative perspective sharpens that focus. It lets him really zero in on Tocqueville's fears about democratic mediocrity, about losing individual excellence, things maybe other scholars might downplay.
Right. He sees Tocqueville wrestling with this fundamental conflict, the aristocrat's love for honor and greatness versus the Democrat's undeniable passion for equality.
And that inner conflict, Mansfield argues, is what gives Tocqueville's insights their power and, frankly, their urgency for us.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself. Mansfield presents Tocqueville not just as a reporter on early America, but as the preeminent philosopher of democracy, a kind of psychologist of the modern soul.
That's the core idea. Mansfield drives home this fundamental paradox of democracy. On the one hand, equality absolutely promotes human dignity, opens up opportunities.
That's the promise.
Right. But simultaneously, it poses a threat to individual excellence, to genuine intellectual diversity, and ultimately, Mansfield argues through Tocqueville, a threat to freedom itself.
And how does that threat manifest?
Through two main pressures, the famous tyranny of the majority and this slower, creepier thing called soft despotism.
And Mansfield says Tocqueville realized the world was changing so profoundly that he had to invent a, quote, new political science. What does that mean in practice?
It means the old ways of thinking about government kings, clear hierarchies, external force, they just didn't apply anymore. Tocqueville saw that the real action, the real battleground in a democracy wasn't constitutions or laws primarily. It was in the human heart, the citizen soul.
So this new science had to be different.
Yeah, practical, psychological. And Mansfield emphasizes it was explicitly partisan on behalf of liberty. It was about understanding how equality changes us, how it shapes our thinking, our desires, our fears.
So Tocqueville saw this democratic wave coming.
He called it a providential fact. Yeah. Like you couldn't stop it. Yeah. It was inevitable.
So he wasn't trying to turn back the clock.
No, he was trying to figure out how to steer it. How do we keep what's best about humanity, liberty, greatness, dignity alive within this overwhelming drive for equality, for sameness?
Okay, let's dig into the details then. Mansfield starts by really grounding us in Tocqueville's unique perspective. He calls him an aristocrat by heart and a democrat by mind.
Right. Born into nobility, his family suffered terribly during the French Revolution's terror. That experience gave him, well, distance.
Distance? How so?
He could accept that equality was coming, maybe even had a moral force, but he wasn't swept away by democratic idealism. And he wasn't trapped in nostalgia for the old ways either. He could critique democracy clear-sightedly.
That dual view lets him really examine how equality reshapes the inner life of the citizen, starting with what Mansfield calls the democratic mind.
Yeah. So in a democracy, citizens tend to distrust old authorities, traditions, grand historical stories. They rely mostly on their own individual judgment.
And they like simple general ideas. You called it pragmatic Cartesianism earlier from the sources, sort of a what works for me right now approach.
Exactly. Practical, straightforward. But here's the twist. When individual citizens feel unsure, when their own judgment feels weak, which, let's face it, happens a lot.
Sure.
They don't typically turn back to tradition or, you know, great philosophers. They turn to the one authority they do trust, the collective, public opinion.
Ah, and that's where the power shifts. Public opinion becomes this enormous, almost godlike force.
Which leads directly to this intellectual tyranny of the majority.
Mm.
And Mansfield stresses, Tocqueville thought this was potentially more dangerous than outright censorship by a king.
More dangerous.
Because it works internally. As Tocqueville famously put it, and Mansfield highlights this, I know of no country in which there is so little independence of mind and real freedom of discussion as in America.
That sounds completely backwards for America.
It does. But Tocqueville's point, as Mansfield explains it, is that the pressure isn't a government decree. It's social. If you deviate too far from the accepted norm, you risk being ostracized, losing social standing, maybe even your livelihood. It enforces conformity through social silencing.
Wow. Okay. That resonates today with online culture and everything.
Absolutely. Now, moving from the mind to the democratic heart, Mansfield points to two key, let's call them pathologies, driven by equality. The first is individualism.
Which isn't just being selfish, right?
No, it's more subtle. It's a conscious, quiet withdrawal. You pull back into your private sphere, just your family, your close friends, your personal concerns. You sort of tune out the wider community.
I can see how that's isolating. But why is it politically dangerous?
Because it breaks down the connections, the shared sense of purpose needed for citizens to act together politically. It makes people atomized, separate, and isolated citizens are weak citizens, easily managed by a centralized state.
Okay. And the second pathology?
Materialism.
Yeah.
This restless, anxious, almost obsessive pursuit of physical comfort, well-being, small pleasures.
Again, why is liking stuff a civic problem?
It's not just liking stuff. It's that the pursuit becomes all-consuming. People get so focused on acquiring and maintaining their material comforts that they neglect the difficult, time-consuming work of being active citizens, of preserving liberty. And, crucially, they start depending on the state to provide the stability and ease that makes that comfortable life possible.
So, okay, we have isolation, apathy, materialism. What's the way out? Did Tocqueville see any remedies in America?
Yes, absolutely. He identified what he called the arts of liberty practices that counteract these democratic tendencies.
What are they?
The first big one is local self-government. Tocqueville was fascinated by the New England township. He saw it as the primary school of liberty.
Primary school? Meaning?
Meaning it forces citizens to learn freedom by doing it. Managing local affairs, roads, schools, budgets, teaches practical skills, responsibility, cooperation. You have to work with your neighbors.
Right. You can't learn self-reliance theoretically. You have to practice it. And by keeping power local, it pushes back against that drift toward a single central authority.
Exactly. And the second remedy, maybe the most famous, is the art of association. Mansfield really emphasizes this. Tocqueville was amazed how Americans were constantly forming groups, clubs, charities, political associations, you name it.
For everything.
For everything. He saw these associations as crucial mini-republics. They fight individualism by forcing people to cooperate, to work towards shared goals outside their private bubble.
So they act as buffers, basically, between the lone individual and the potentially overwhelming state. Joining the PTA or the volunteer fire department is actually a political act that strengthens democracy.
Absolutely. Even if you don't think of it that way. But, and this is a big but for Mansfield.
Yeah.
Even with these powerful remedies, the ultimate danger looms. Which brings us back to soft despotism.
Right. This wasn't about jackboots in prison.
No. It's gentle, mild, almost therapeutic. The state becomes this vast, nurturing, tutelary power. It anticipates your needs, provides for your comfort, manages all the messy details of life.
Sounds nice.
That's the insidious part. It doesn't break your will with force. Instead, as Tocqueville put it, it softens, bends, and directs it until, Well, here's that incredibly famous, chilling quote Mansfield focuses on. The government does not tyrannize, but it compresses, enervates, extinguishes, and stupefies a people till each nation is reduced to nothing better than a flock of timid and industrious animals of which the government is the shepherd.
Wow. Reduced to sheep? Just comfortable, well-fed sheep.
And the terrifying part is, we might choose it. We might willingly trade the burdens, the difficulties, the anxieties of freedom for the comfort and security of being looked after like perpetual children.
So the real threat isn't an external enemy overthrowing us. It's an internal willingness to give up control.
That's the core of the warning Mansfield extracts. The distinction between hard tyranny and this soft internal despotism is Tocqueville's great diagnostic tool for our age.
Yeah.
It forces us to look at our own desires, our own willingness to be managed.
Okay, let's try to pull out, say, three core themes that Mansfield really hammers home about Tocqueville's message for us today.
All right. Theme one, equality versus excellence. That's the bedrock tension. Democracy inherently levels things, which is good in many ways, but it also risks promoting a kind of comfortable mediocrity. Tocqueville, and Mansfield underscores this, was desperately looking for ways to keep space open for individual greatness, for ambition, for true merit within an egalitarian system. It makes you ask, are we valuing comfort over real achievement in our culture, in our schools, in our lives?
Okay, theme two.
Theme two, more is over laws. This is huge for Tocqueville. Constitutions, elections, laws, they matter, of course. But they are less important than the mores in French, the habits of the heart.
Meaning customs, values, the kind of underlying moral fabric of society.
Exactly. A free society ultimately depends on self-restraint, on civic virtue, on character. And laws alone can't create that. The health of a democracy rests more on its citizens' character than its political structures.
And that connects to another quote Mansfield highlights, right, about American pragmatism.
Yes. Self-interest rightly understood. Tocqueville observed this American genius for linking personal benefit to the common good. The quote goes, "The doctrine does not inspire great sacrifices, but it prompts small ones every day. If it does not lead directly to virtue through the will, it brings them near it insensibly through their habits."
So you help out with the town cleanup not because you're a saint, but because you want a nice town to live in. It channels self-interest towards cooperation. Clever?
Very clever. I mean, good citizenship, practical, almost profitable. Okay, theme three. Democracy is hard work. It's fragile. It's an achievement, not a default setting.
It doesn't just run itself.
No. It requires constant effort, constant vigilance, constant innovation in our institutions and habits to fight that natural democratic drift towards apathy, towards centralization, towards just letting someone else handle things. Freedom isn't a gift you receive. It's a skill you have to constantly practice.
Okay, that's a lot to think about. How do we take these big ideas and actually apply them? What are the practical takeaways?
Well, application one is pretty direct. Combat individualism, join something. Seriously, Tocqueville's antidote was the art of association. Resist that urge to just retreat into your private life or your online world.
So the practical step is consciously find a group, a local charity, a book club, maybe even local politics, something real, in person.
Yes. Rebuild those face-to-face social bonds. Learn to compromise, cooperate, work with people you might not agree with on everything. That's democracy in action, right there.
Makes sense. Application two.
Intellectual courage. In our age of social media echo chambers and intense pressure to conform online, Tocqueville's warning about the tyranny of the majority feels incredibly relevant.
So what's the action?
Consciously seek out different perspectives. Read things you know you'll disagree with. And maybe even more importantly, defend the right of others to express unpopular views, even if you find them offensive. Value genuine debate over just feeling comfortable or being popular.
That's tough, but crucial. Okay, application three.
Use the soft despotism lens. When you hear about government proposals, especially ones that promise to make life much easier or solve complex problems effortlessly, ask that Tocquevillian question.
Which is?
What's the trade-off here in terms of personal responsibility, in terms of autonomy? Cultivate a healthy skepticism about centralization and dependence. Remember, if the government is going to take care of everything for you,
it needs to know everything about you.
Pretty much. It needs to manage you.
Okay. So, reflecting on all this, what really struck you most from Mansfield's interpretation?
For me, it's how Mansfield highlights Tocqueville's own inner struggle. This aristocrat, steeped in ideals of honor and greatness, looking at democracy clear-eyed. That unique position allowed him to see the potential downsides of equality, the risk of mediocrity in a way few others could. That tension between equality as a fact and excellence as a goal, it's something we have to actively wrestle with.
Yeah. What surprised me most, I think, was the idea that the biggest danger isn't some external enemy or dramatic collapse. It's internal. It's our own apathy, our own materialism, our slide into individualism. We could, as Tocqueville feared, become the willing agents of our own servitude. Mansfield really shifts the focus inward to our habits of the heart. It feels less like a political program and more like a call for, I don't know, personal and cultural renewal.
It really does. Which leads to a final thought for you, the listener. If democracy is, as Tocqueville said, this unavoidable providential fact, but liberty is this fragile, almost aristocratic art that needs constant cultivation, what specific aristocratic virtues, maybe a love of honor, a commitment to excellence, disciplined self-reliance, intellectual courage, what virtues are you actively practicing in your own life to push back against that comfortable slide into being managed, into soft despotism?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacha Foundation.